one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, this is the first time I've really actually been worried that the Phillies might not make the playoffs. A brutal series in St. Louis for an exhausted Phillies team. They lose 2 out of 3 to the Cardinals in a series that saw the Phillies fall out of a wild card spot. We'll tell you about the action from Tuesday and Wednesday as the Cardinals, a team that the Phillies are battling with for the National League wild card, had their number in this one. And the team leaking oil, it seems, in a couple of different areas. Zach Wheeler, the disappearing offense. We're a little concerned about Bryce Harper's knee. So lots of things to get to here on this edition of the podcast. Also, we will do a quick preview of the Field of Dreams game. So, you know, the Phillies have been kind of mired in it a little bit, but they're going to be playing in one of Major League Baseball's very cool showcase games on Thursday night. We'll get into that coming up here in a few minutes as well. But before we do all that, just a quick reminder to spread the news about the Hittin' Season podcast. If there is a Phillies fan in your life that doesn't know about us, tell them about Hittin' Season. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. And of course, our roundtable editions of the show can be found on WHYY's YouTube channel. Just subscribe to the WHYY YouTube channel and you'll get Hittin' Season as well as WHYY's other outstanding efforts. They're on the digital stream. But if you like to watch the podcast, watch our roundtable, you can find us there. All right, let's jump into this series against St. Louis, and we'll talk specifically about the games here on Tuesday and Wednesday night. Phillies lose 2 out of 3 to the Cardinals. They won on Monday 6-5 in a game they almost blew, by the way, but then lost 2-0 in the Christopher Sanchez game on Tuesday, and then were spanked 7-1 in the Zach Wheeler game on Wednesday afternoon. On Tuesday night, they wasted 6 shutout innings from their ace, Christopher Sanchez, and they went 0-7 with runners in scoring position, hitting into 4 double plays on their way to that 2-0 loss. Down 1-0 in the 7th, it looked like the Phillies were going to flip the script on St. Louis. They had the bases loaded, nobody out. Schwarber, Turner, Harper all walked to start the inning, but they could not make the Cardinals pay. Luis Arraez, of course, the big trade acquisition at the trade deadline, had been mired in a tremendous slump, especially for him. He hits the ball hard to first base, but grounds into a 3-2-3 double play, and then JT Realmuto lined out, and that was it. The Phillies waste a bases-loaded, no-out opportunity. The Cardinals scored the next inning and lose 2-0. It was only the 4th time the Phillies have lost a game started by Christopher Sanchez going back to April 30th. So a rare occurrence to lose a Christopher Sanchez start, but that's what happened on Tuesday night. And then in Wednesday's finale, the bats went cold again, 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position in their 7-1 loss. The only run scored on back-to-back doubles by Bryce Harper and Luis Arraez. Arraez did come through early in the game to tie it at 1, got off the schneid, finally got another base hit, but he has, again, been struggling over these last 5 or 6 games or so. And the Phillies overall have been struggling. They've dropped two straight series, and they have lost 6 of their last 8 series played. They are 10-15 since the All-Star break, and I mentioned right at the top, this is the first time all year I've had a serious doubt as to whether the Phillies would make the playoffs. I have been relatively certain that the Phillies would find a way in there. And in my heart of hearts, I still don't see the Phillies missing the playoffs. I think they will find a way to get in there. But if the season ended today, the Phillies would be on the outside looking in. They have the same record as the Arizona Diamondbacks, 64-58 for the 3rd wildcard spot, but Arizona holds the tiebreaker. They've dropped a game behind the streaking San Diego Padres, who are red hot. They went from potential sellers at the trade deadline to being the hottest team in baseball now. They hold the 2nd wildcard spot by themselves by a game, and the Phillies are a whopping 7 games behind the Cubs for the 1st wild card. The Phillies have just 40 games left here in the regular season, guys. 40 games left. It's a 40-game sprint to the finish line. And after the game, JT Realmuto was asked if the Phillies expect to make the playoffs, and he said, quite honestly, no, not playing like this. He said, we've got to turn it around. There's still plenty of time to do so, but nobody in here is happy about the brand of baseball we're playing right now. We've just got to figure it out, turn it around, and play a lot better here pretty quick. I mean, that's the mantra we have heard these guys been saying week after week, month after month, and really year after year whenever the team comes up short. You know, we're just not playing great. We got to figure it out. We got to figure it out is a very common expression used by this group as they try to explain why they are so inconsistent. But remember, and it's hard to remember this because of how the 2022 season finished, going to the World Series and all that incredible October run, but the 2022 Phillies were in much the same situation as this 2026 team, even deep into September. That 22 team played under 500 baseball in September. They needed a hot last week and some very fortunate things happening on the scoreboard during that last week in order to sneak in as the third wild card before the Phillies could go on that run. So the Phillies have been here before. It's been a while. But the other thing that's interesting is that the Phillies have had their most success in the playoffs when they were a wild card team. In 22, when they again snuck in as the third wild card, they went on that run and went all the way to the World Series. In 23, they were wild card number one and hosted a wild card series, but won that easily and then went on to beat the Braves in the NLDS and should have made it to the World Series. That was the year. That was the year, obviously. We all say that. That was the year. Then these last 2 years, they won the division. Now in 24, they got out to that huge lead, a super hot start, and then fizzled after the All-Star break, kind of like they're doing now. And they won the National League East, but they were not playing their best baseball entering October, and it all fell apart against the Mets in the NLDS. Last year, the Phillies were remarkably good in August and September. You could not have asked for a Phillies team to be playing better at the end of a season than the 2025 Phillies were heading into that playoff series against the Los Angeles Dodgers in the NLDS. That team was humming on all cylinders. I still remember that week leading into the playoffs, how good the Phillies were playing. All facets. There were no letdowns. All aspects of the team was playing really well. And then they went into that series against the Dodgers, and the offense absolutely laid an egg. And the bullpen blew a late lead in game one and could not find a way to beat the Dodgers in that series. So you just don't really know what a team looks like in the regular season. Often belies what will happen in October, but you've got to get there first. And right now, the Phillies are not playing good enough baseball to get into the playoffs. And that, of course, you can't have a World Series run without getting into the tournament. And so the Phillies need to figure this out pretty quickly. I'm going to use JT Realmuto's phrase. They got to figure it out. Turn it around and play a lot better here pretty quick because there are just 40 games left. And this right now, the San Diego Padres are streaking past the Phillies. They are like a rocket going past a meteor crashing to the earth. I mean, that's kind of what this feels like. I still believe the Phillies are better than the Arizona Diamondbacks. I think they will outlast the Diamondbacks. I think of all these teams here, the Diamondbacks will be the ones on the outside looking in. But I don't know. I mean, there's some things to worry about here, which takes us into our first segment, which is, the thing I'm worried about right now is a little bit of Zach Wheeler. I'm a little bit worried about Zach Wheeler. His last few starts have been worrisome. His last four starts in particular. On Wednesday night against St. Louis, he went five innings, was cruising through four innings. But then through five innings, he gave up five runs, four earned, with six hits, one walk, and five strikeouts. He only needed 49 pitches to get through the first four innings of the game on Wednesday night, and then did a remarkable Aaron Nola impersonation. I mean, it was the implosion in the fifth inning. I mean, I imagine Aaron Nola tipped his cap to Zach Wheeler as Wheeler was going through it there. Wheeler threw 35 pitches in the fifth inning and got tagged for four earned runs in that frame, turning a 1-1 game into a 5-1 deficit. Particularly troublesome was he gave up a two-out RBI single to the number 9 hole hitter, Cesar Prieto, who had been 0-27 in the big leagues this season. And then he got spanked around a little bit towards the end of the inning. Alec Burleson and Jordan Walker delivered really loud RBI doubles in an inning that totally got away from Zach Wheeler. In 20 starts this season, Wheeler has allowed four runs or more just five times. Three of those five times have come in his last four starts since July 27th. And the only start in which it didn't was a rain-shortened start in Baltimore. He's given up 13 earned runs in his last four starts. ballooning his ERA, not ballooning. That's not a good phrase. That's not a good adjective. But he, his ERA has jumped from 2.16 to 2.89. The angry Zach Wheeler from the from getting snubbed from the All-Star game that we all thought we were going to see here in the second half. And the angry Zach Wheeler after the Toronto Blue Jays complained that his foot wasn't actually making contact with the pitching rubber. And he yelled a nasty word at the Toronto Blue Jays dugout in the middle of the game against Toronto last time out. We're not really seeing an effective angry Zach Wheeler. We're just kind of seeing Aaron Nola-like Zach Wheeler at the moment. So you had this start on Wednesday night against St. Louis. That start against the Blue Jays 5 days ago on August 7th was a 5 1/3 innings, 4 earned runs, 7 hits, 5 walks in that game with 6 strikeouts. The Phillies won that game, but it was ugly. On August 2nd in Baltimore, he went 2 innings, and then the game was delayed with a long rain delay, and he never came back out to finish that game. On July 27th in Miami, you'll remember Wheeler's velocity was way down in that game. It was really scary. 3 innings, 5 earned runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts, 2 home runs allowed in that game on July 27th. Now, his velocity has returned a little bit, but he's still not throwing as hard as we've seen him this year. His velocity is down a little bit. He says he's not hurt. He swears he's not hurt, but that he's a little out of whack and that he needs to get it figured out. He talked to the media after the game and did not seem concerned. He says he's not hurt. This did happen last year before the blood clot was discovered in his arm. You'll remember that last season, Zach Wheeler, around this same time, was encountering some struggles. His velocity was down quite a bit at the end of last season before he went on the injured list. Up through July 6th last year, he had a 2.17 ERA. But then in a game on July 12th against the Padres, he went 6 innings but gave up 4 runs. In a game against Boston, next time out, 6 innings, just 2 earned runs. But then against the Yankees, 5 2/3 innings, 4 runs allowed. Against the Tigers, he took the loss going 6 innings, giving up 4 runs, 3 runs, 3 earned runs allowed, 3 home runs. He did strike out 10 and walk nobody in that game, so that was a weird start for him. Against this, he went 5 innings, gave up 2 runs, and then gave up 2 runs in 5 innings his next start against Washington. Before then, he was done for the season. In those 6 games, he put up an ERA of 4.54 with a 4.59 FIP. Still 47 strikeouts in those 33 2/3 innings, but he started giving up the long ball, and we saw the velocity start to dip. So you're not sure if this is just a kind of a dead arm thing for a guy his age at this stage of the season, and that it will come back. That is the hope, of course. But one of the reasons the Phillies are seen as a legitimate threat to the Dodgers and to get back to the World Series is that they have 3 starting pitchers at the top of their rotation that are unmatched by most, if not everyone, in Major League Baseball. But if Zach Wheeler is not effective, if his velocity is down even further, and if he's getting banged around here, then that advantage goes away. They desperately need Zach Wheeler to figure out why he's out of whack. Again, he's got to get it. He said he's got to get it figured out. They got to figure out. We're figuring everything's out. A lot of things to figure out. Why he's a little bit out of whack. But I guess the good news is that he says he's not injured. He says he's not hurt and that he'll be going out there 5 days from now. You hope that he does figure out exactly why he is a little bit out of whack. But he was missing at the top of the zone tonight on Wednesday night against the Cardinals. He was trying to get, especially Burleson and Jordan Walker, trying to get those guys out with fastballs up in the zone. And they were up. I mean, they were decent. They weren't meatballs, but those guys were ready for them, and he just didn't fool them on those high fastballs. And so that's part of the issue also with Zach Wheeler right now is his fastball command, and JT Realmuto mentioned this after the game, his fastball command isn't where it needs to be. He's usually very good at putting his fastball on the outside corner, inside corner, up, down, wherever it needs to be, and then all of his other pitches play off of that. Over the last 4 starts or so, mechanically, it seems as though there's something going on that's hurting his fastball location, his fastball command. And one would imagine Caleb Cotham and JT Realmuto and Zach would be looking at the film and figure out exactly what's going on. But that has to happen. That in order for this season to end in a way that's going to make everyone happy, Zach Wheeler cannot be a worry. He's got to be something that you hang your hat on. And he has been that for most of the season. Hopefully this is just a 4-game blip for the Phillies' star right-hander. Let's talk a little bit about the disappearing offense. The addition of Luis Arraez alone was not enough to change the Jekyll and Hyde nature of this Phillies offense, of these guys who we've been watching play for the last 5 years. On Monday, they scored four or more runs in a game for the 12th straight game. That's tied for the most consecutive games of four or more runs in Major League Baseball this year. And then on Tuesday and Wednesday, they scored one run total in the entire last two games, in the entire last 18 innings of play. One run total in games started by Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler. You want to talk about the nightmare postseason scenario? You want to talk about why, just because the Phillies have Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler and Jesus Luzardo, why they shouldn't be considered the favorites to knock off the Dodgers? It's because we've seen what the Phillies did on Tuesday night and Wednesday night, especially Tuesday night as much as anything else, waste brilliant pitching with an offense that can't get out of its own way. Now, I will at least say it's nice to see that the Phillies actually got some runners on base, which has been a problem this year for them. They have done that better since Luis Arraez came along. But now, all of a sudden, they're not getting these guys home. They've been great at hitting with runners in scoring position this year up until the last month or so. And of course, that is a statistic that oftentimes does go up and down. It's not a statistic you can rely on. It's not predictive. It's circumstantial. And right now, the Phillies are not performing. They're not coming through in those situations. So Christopher Sanchez goes out and he throws a gem. Doesn't matter. When you score no runs, it doesn't matter how good your starting pitcher is. He can't win. It is a mathematical impossibility for a starting pitcher, no matter how good he does, to win a baseball game if your offense scores zero, or let's just say almost impossible to win when they score just one run. Every now and then you get the 1-0 win, but that requires a pitcher to be perfect, and that's usually not a fair expectation. So this offense, again, just Jekyll and Hyde. They score four or more runs in 12 straight games, then they go zero runs and one run against, let's face it, a Cardinals staff that is not beating down the doors. This is not a phenomenal staff. It's not Jacob Mizorowski out there. It's not what used to be Paul Skeens. You know, it's not, these are not star players. But the Phillies offense just couldn't do anything about it. It was good to see Arraez get out of his slump by hitting that RBI double down the right field line. But he entered Wednesday with 7 hits and 36 at-bats in a Phillies uniform, but none in his last 15. Now, for a normal hitter, that is certainly like, hey, yeah, you know, I'm struggling a little bit right now. But for Luis Arraez, that's like an 0 for 30. He doesn't do that. And while Arraez did have the RBI double, he went 1 for 4 in the game. So that batting average is now down to 313. That's down 11 points since joining the Phillies. Batting average down 11 points. That's a lot. Batting averages don't drop that fast. You have to really be in a slump in order to lose 11 points in that short a time frame. Unfortunately, Luis Arraez has just picked a bad time to go into a little bit of a slump. Not hitting fastballs. He's really struggling against fastballs right now, and that is something he is known for. He is known for smoking fastballs. So I'm not worried about Luis Arraez. It's just not coming at a very good time. And the rest of the lineup did not come through each of these last two games. You had Ofers from Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner at the top of the lineup. You had Bryson Stock got another hit, and he continues to hit, but just, you know, 1 for 4 for him. And then Alec Bohm went 2 for 3 in the game on Wednesday, but the Phillies only got 6 hits in the game. Only walked twice, one extra base hit, that from Bryce Harper. The team went 1 for 8 with runners in scoring position in the game here on Wednesday. Oh, and by the way, Jose Alvarado, again, I mean, I guess it's good to put him in a game that you're trailing 5-1, but he was not able to keep the game close entering the 7th inning. Only got 1 out, gave up a hit, 2 runs, 3 walks for Jose Alvarado in his 1/3 of an inning. Jose Alvarado has become unusable at this point. He has become utterly and totally unusable. There is absolutely zero use for a relief pitcher that is as wild as Jose Alvarado is. We've seen this before with him. This is how he was with Tampa before he came to Philadelphia. But I think Jose Alvarado is afraid to throw over the strike zone right now. He knows that his stuff is getting creamed. And so now he's afraid to throw strikes. Now he's not pitching with any kind of confidence. And so that is a definite problem for him, because he was a guy who needed to be in the strike zone in order to be effective. And he has lost the ability or lost the confidence to throw the ball over the plate. You can't have that if you're a relief pitcher. You absolutely cannot have a relief pitcher throw it and keep running them out there unless it's in a dire emergency and you got nobody left if they can't throw the ball over the plate, which is why I don't think Jose Alvarado will be on the postseason roster. I don't see this changing in August or September. There's a lot of season left, but he can't get sent down to the minors, I don't think. I think that time has passed. They're not going to put him in high leverage situations anymore. Obviously, they were down 4 runs today on the road in a game everybody just wanted to get out of there. And they throw Jose Alvarado out there, but he couldn't even get him 3 outs. Could not get them 3 outs. Just that's a fall for Jose Alvarado right now, who has not really been effective going back a couple of years now. Something else for us to discuss here. Bryce Harper did have a double in the game here on Wednesday. He continues to hit pretty well. But there are some concerns about Bryce Harper's knee. And everybody's asking and kind of, I think, come to the conclusion that the Bryce Harper in right field experiment should end. And it's not because he's a bad outfielder, although he has missed a couple of fly balls that most right fielders would get. But there is real concern, at least on my part, that playing in the outfield is going to mess his knee up. And they can't be stupid enough to keep putting Bryce Harper in a position where he's gonna hurt his knee, where he's gonna continue to feel discomfort in his knee. It's time to put Harper back at first base full time and get him out of the outfield. And yes, I'm sorry, Alec Bohm, that means you're on the bench. That means we're going with Brian De La Cruz and Derek Hill in right field. And Alec Bohm, who I'm sorry to say, we'll get to Alec Bohm more in just a second, but that means Alec Bohm is riding the bench. And you're going to run Brian De La Cruz and Derek Hill in right field and left field and have some kind of combination there with those two guys, Brandon Marsh and Justin Crawford. Basically, you're going to run a 4-man outfield with Brian De La Cruz, Derek Hill, Justin Crawford, and Brandon Marsh. In his final at-bat on Wednesday night, Harper took a timeout after falling behind 0-2 in the count. And he just looked very uncomfortable up around the plate, you know, kind of bending his knee a little bit, or just the way he was walking around, it made you think that there was something going on there. And it's been a media report over the last couple of days that Harper has felt soreness in his knee. He says he feels it when he has to start and stop suddenly in the outfield, but that it's not affecting him at the plate, that it's not a big deal. It's not a big injury, but that it is bothering him a little bit when he's playing the outfield. Now, after the game, he said that his pause, the reason he took a timeout after falling behind 0-2, was that he wanted to just take a pause after taking 2 bad swings in the first 2 pitches. He said he did not take it because his knee was a problem. He said his knee wasn't a problem, and he was just pausing for a moment because just to gather himself. But I got to say, man, I know what I'm seeing. And if there is even a chance that Bryce Harper is going to hurt himself playing right field, if his knee is already giving him trouble, this is a knee that he fouled a ball off of a few weeks ago, maybe even a couple of months ago, hasn't really bothered him playing first base, but has been bothering him since he moved to right field. And Bryce Harper has had some games since this all happened where he's been the DH, because I think they are reluctant to have him out in right field a lot. And also, Alec Bohm is struggling at first base. He made that error over the weekend, or actually it wasn't an error, it was more of a fielder's choice, but he made a huge mental error in that game against the Toronto Blue Jays that led to a Blue Jays extra inning run that in a game they would eventually win. He made an error in the second inning on Wednesday night that led to a Cardinals run. And then he failed to field a ground ball in the pivotal 5th inning that extended a Cardinals rally. Now, that wasn't a gimme there. He was holding a runner on. He kind of had to range a little bit to his right to get it. But I feel like that's a ball a lot of first basemen would probably be able to snag. So it's not like Alec Bohm is, and they've been, my goodness, over the weekend, they brought him in as a defensive replacement for Kyle Schwarber. Now, I know Kyle Schwarber hasn't played much first base, and he's not very good at it either. Alec Bohm has more experience at first base, but my goodness, not only do you take Schwarber's bat out of the lineup in place of Bohm's, now you have Bohm at first base defensively. Like, this is just, I get why they have given Bohm a lot of rope here. And he had 2 more hits on Wednesday. But this team is better with Bryce Harper at first base and Brian De La Cruz and Derek Hill getting more playing time in right field. It just is. It just is. And not only do you get more production, I think, that way, the bigger reason is Bryce Harper's health, his knee. Man, you can't run the risk of your star player hurting himself or having his knee start to hurt where then it affects his batting. Can you imagine if you keep playing him out there in right field and the knee is getting a little bit worse and a little bit worse, and now all of a sudden he can't swing right. Now all of a sudden it's messing up his timing at the plate. Well, now not only have you messed yourself up on defense in right field, now you've lost Bryce Harper, the offensive star. It's just stupid. They got to know it. They've got to know it. They do. I mean, and they've just, Alec Bohm, sometimes established players have had to sit. They did it to Castellanos last year in what we all knew was going to be his final season in Philadelphia. He became a part-time player. They sat him. Of course they can do it to Alec Bohm. They were paying Castellanos more money than Alec Bohm. Now, Castellanos had an attitude problem, and that was part of the issue. I don't think Alec Bohm has an attitude problem towards authority in the Phillies clubhouse, but, you know, the demeanor isn't great. We talked about that on the previous podcast. And by the way, the other part of this defensive repositioning, Bryson Stott, he's killing it at third base. What a baseball player. I have been down on Bryson Stott at times over these last couple of years. He's playing better than I thought he was capable of right now. I didn't think we were going to get back to this, where he's hitting line drives all over the place, pulling the ball in the air to right field. He's just had a tremendous season here, especially over the last 3 months. And he's making all the plays at third base, making some really difficult plays. He made one play in the hole going to his left where he had to basically field the ball behind him, spin around, and then one hop a throw like third baseman used to do on the AstroTurf over to Bryce Harper at first base. It was a beautiful play. Looks like he's been playing third base for forever. So I take back my criticism of Bryson Stott. He is playing some phenomenal baseball right now. My hat's off to him. One of the few guys out there right now who is playing effective baseball. And so at a new position, too. So it's really difficult to do that. Bryson Stott is doing a great job. But here, my message again to Don Mattingly in the Phillies front office, who I know listens to this podcast religiously. It's time to sit Alec Bohm down, put Bryce Harper at first base, run those four outfielders in a rotation, and go with that. And then you have Alec Bohm coming off the bench as a right-handed threat against a tough lefty starter or a tough lefty reliever. If there's a game that he does, if there's a pitcher that he does really well against, you can put him in the lineup. But just enough. Enough is enough. You're better off with Bryce Harper at first base saving his knee in what I think is going to turn into something not so great if they don't take this advice. All right, last thing on this episode of the podcast, the Phillies and Twins will take part in the Field of Dreams game taking place at the site of the movie Dyersville, Iowa on Thursday night. Game time is set for 7:30 Eastern time. It's going to be broadcast exclusively on Netflix. So for those of us who don't have Netflix, it will be very difficult to watch the game, but I will figure out a way to do that. The players, of course, will do as they've always done and enter the ballpark through a cornfield. Now, it's a recreated cornfield, but actually it is the same cornfield. So there's two separate fields at this location. One is the actual Field of Dreams field where they shot the movie, but they don't have any seating there. It's not a stadium. You can't play a Major League Baseball game on that field. So they've created another field on the other side of the cornfield. So you actually do, it is walking through the same cornfield, but it is onto a different field of play. So the Phillies and the Twins will enter the ballpark through the iconic cornfield, recreated on a separate field from the one used in the movie. They'll be wearing their 1939 throwback uniforms. And it's going to be these games, even as much as the Phillies need a break and as much as this team is exhausted right now, you can just see that they're running on fumes here. And it was just, and as an aside, it was miserable in St. Louis this week. It was miserable. A typical St. Louis August where it's just hot and steamy and humid and the life just gets sucked out of you. Now, that's not an excuse because the Cardinals, they have to play in it too. And the Phillies they play in Philadelphia. We get humidity in Philadelphia as well. So, I mean, this is not a St. Louis exclusive, but It was really brutal this week. And I think the Phillies, I think it sapped their energy. I think they're a tired team. I think they're an exhausted team. And they have to go to play this game in Iowa against the Twins. The Twins are the quote-unquote home team in this game. Following the game on Thursday night, the club will then fly to Minnesota right afterwards, where they will spend Friday's off day there in Minnesota. So they get it better than spending it in Iowa. Nothing against Iowa, but I think there's probably more to do in the Twin Cities. So they'll finally get a day off on Friday, a day off that everybody absolutely needs before finishing up the series with the Twins on Saturday and Sunday at Target Field in Minnesota. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. And we're going to have an end-of-week podcast for you. Justin and Liz will recap the Field of Dreams game for the Hittin' Season episode on Friday. So that should be a lot of fun. You're going to want to make sure that you check that out. Again, please tell your friends and family members and random strangers on the street about the Hittin' Season podcast. Even though the Phillies have been kind of a tough watch right now, they are still fun to talk about. And if you don't want to watch the games but do kind of want to stay in the loop, that's the perfect thing to do, is to just listen to this podcast, and myself and Justin and Liz will keep you up to date on everything that's going on, all the key storylines. You got them right here. So we will, playoffs or not, we'll take you through the rest of this 2026 Philly season. We'll get through it together, gang. I promise you. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.